Russian forces have today been striking back at Ukrainian troops with missiles, drones and airstrikes. The retaliation comes a week after Ukraine's first incursion into the Kursk region of Western Russia. Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky has claimed its action will bring peace closer by putting pressure on Vladimir Putin. It's the first time since Russia's invasion in February 2022 that Ukrainian forces have gained a foothold in opposition territory and marks a major change in the conduct of the war. Donika Obakoin is Professor of Post-Soviet Politics at Dublin City University and he joins us now on the line. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Rachel.
Ukraine's change of tactic caught just about everybody by surprise. Why do you believe it has launched this offensive now?
Well, even though it's surprising, it's consistent with how Ukraine has adapted to this, you know, asymmetrical war, because, you know, Russia outmans Ukraine 4-1. It has a huge military industrial complex, so it has huge advantages when it comes to hardware and supplies. So Ukraine has always had to think outside the box. It's had to play a weak hand well, and it's had to be innovative. And we saw with the liberation of Kyiv, for example, which nobody predicted over 2 years ago. We saw with the way they pushed back Russian forces from Kharkiv and from Kherson. So this is another example, a spectacular example. I mean, it's difficult to overstate the importance of what has happened here. I mean, this is the first time that Russia has been invaded since 1941, since World War II. But then Russia wasn't a nuclear power. Russia is a nuclear power now. So it's also, you might say, a first of sorts that a nuclear power has been has a large part of its territory, at least temporarily, annexed. And this is not just seizing like a field. This is about 1,000 square kilometers. Even by their own admission, the Russian government has conceded that dozens of urban settlements have been seized by the Ukrainians, and almost 200,000 Russians have been evacuated from the Kursk region.
Mm-hmm. Before we talk about the likely consequences of this and how it's likely to play out, can I ask you about Kursk? How symbolically important is it?
Well, Kursk resonates on a number of levels. I mean, the largest battle of World War II was fought at Kursk. It was a major tank battle and was seen as a turning of the tide for the Soviet Union. And we often associate that with a Russian victory. Certainly many Western commentators do. But it's important to point out that Ukrainians fought disproportionately and died disproportionately in World War II, far more proportionately than Russians did. So this was a collective effort against aggression. But also the Kursk, and it's an interesting anniversary. Yesterday was the 24th anniversary of the sinking of the Kursk submarine. Some of your listeners will remember that 118 servicemen died, and it was during the first few months of Putin's reign. And Vladimir Zelensky made reference to this in his nighttime address last night, when he said that the catastrophe of Kursk, the sinking of the submarine, was the symbolic beginning of Putin's regime. And then he went on to say, now we can see the finale for him. It is also Kursk. So he was essentially playing almost a mind game with Putin, because this sinking of the submarine has kind of played on Putin's reputation for many years.
Ukraine relies upon international support. Were any of its allies likely to have known what it was going to do?
No. I think that the likelihood of leaks would have been far too great. The risks would have been far too great. I mean, you know, the vast majority of people in Ukraine were surprised. Even the troops who were committed to this were surprised and given no advance notice, really, of where they were going. These were combat-ready troops, of course, which is one of the reasons why they made such huge advances against, you know, essentially internal security forces and border security in Russia. So, no, I mean, they wouldn't have been given advance notice, but it has given great heart to Ukraine's support. You know, there was always talk of this fatigue among supporters that, you know, Ukraine was perhaps slowly losing, or at worst was maybe a stalemate. But this has certainly given Ukraine a regained initiative, and they haven't even announced what their objectives are. I mean, their whole strategy seems to be to keep Russia guessing and to keep surprising Russia, which, as I said, is a consistent theme in how Ukraine has approached the war.
Is there any sign, though, that Russia is doing what Ukraine had probably hoped for and redirecting a significant number of soldiers from eastern Ukraine?
It's still too early to say, but if Russia is to repel this invasion, it will have to do so because they are already having manpower shortages. They are having to essentially empty the prisons, appeal to people's, you know, with advertisements for extraordinarily high salaries. They're you know, bringing up ethnic minorities from places like Buryatia and Tuvash and whatnot. So, you know, they if they are going to repel this, and they would really want to repel it quickly, because every day that Ukraine is occupying such a large territory is a humiliation for Vladimir Putin. They are going to have to divert large resources from the Donbass arena. And this is essentially, I think, what is the main objective of the Ukrainians, is to divert those forces. And also, I mean, if we were to listen to what Vladimir Zelensky said, he was saying that this was one of the main launching pads for missile attacks on Ukraine. So in a sense, they're countering the terrorist attacks that have been taking place over many months and killing many Ukrainians by degrading the military system in Russia over the border.
Is Ukraine likely to try something similar elsewhere? I mean, people may have heard yesterday about parts of the neighbouring region of Belgorod being evacuated. Or, to be realistic about it, does Ukraine have the troops to do that?
Well, Ukraine has argued from the beginning that Russia is something of a paper tiger, that despite its large geography, its military-industrial complex gives it disproportionate clout. And they will have, in a sense, proved their point this week by how rapidly they advanced into Russia. And you have to remember the precedent of last year when Yevgeny Prigozhin, the leader of Wagner, advanced 800 kilometres in a single day through Russia, you know, when he was taking on Vladimir Putin, and then essentially that rebellion dissolved. So it has proved that, you know, there is a fluidity to this war. And what Ukraine has also demonstrated to Russia is that they can strike now at locations of their own choosing. There's a 2,000 kilometer border between Russia and Ukraine. So by not making clear again their objectives or their next targets, you know, they're forcing Russia into a position of having to defend everywhere at once. And that's going to drain resources, obviously, in the main arena of conflict, which is Donbass.
Dunica O'Bakoin, Professor of Post-Soviet Politics at Dublin City University. Thanks for being with us this lunchtime.